Welcome to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte, a program where executives and federal government leaders talk about the issues and initiatives that are making a real impact on the business of government today, to help government help America. From cyber attacks to natural disasters, our national security faces serious threats, and danger to our physical and cyber infrastructure requires a coordinated approach to keep them secure. It's particularly appropriate in December because December is National Critical Infrastructure and Protection Resilience Month. Joining us to discuss the increasing connectivity of physical and cyber infrastructure and the need for a whole-of-nation approach are Suzanne Spaulding, the Deputy Undersecretary for National Protection and Programs Directorate. She oversees infrastructure protection, U.S. visit, and the Federal Protective Service with a mission to reduce the risk and enhance the resiliency of critical infrastructure, secure federal facilities, and advance identity management and verification. Mark Weatherford is the Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity for the National Protection and Programs Directorate at DHS. In that position, Mr. Weatherford leads the department's efforts to create a safe, secure, and resilient cyberspace. Mr. Weatherford has a wealth of experience in information technology and cybersecurity at the federal, state, and private sector levels. And Lieutenant General Harry Radaghi, former director of the Defense Information Systems Agency and a four-time federal agency CIO. He's now the chairman of the Deloitte Center for Cyber Innovation and a director with Deloitte Services. Thank you all for being here. It's great to see you all.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here.
And Suzanne, I'm going to start with you. So tell us, what is the National Protection and Program Directorate's mission, and how does it correspond with the intersection of cyber and physical security?
Well, Jane, the NPBD leads the Department of Homeland Security's mission to enhance the protection and resilience of our nation's critical infrastructure. You know, the energy, transportation, communications, water, financial services, those things which really form the backbone of our way of life. And what we have found is that these sectors have systems that are increasingly networked. And so the systems that control key aspects of the delivery of those services to the American public are now vulnerable to cyber attacks. And cyber attacks can produce physical consequences.
So I would just add the one of the things that we added to the NPPD about a year ago was a focus on cybersecurity. So within the organization, we have the Cybersecurity and Communications Organization, which really is responsible for coordinating with not only the federal government, but state and local governments and the private sector among the 18 critical infrastructures on how we raise the bar on cybersecurity, how we respond to cybersecurity events, and as Suzanne said, how we can help build resilience into the system.
Well, let me just ask. It seems now that we're recognizing that cyber and physical security are gradually becoming more connected, making us increasingly vulnerable. So what is the history, and why are they becoming increasingly connected?
So I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Certainly the efficiencies that that digital technology has brought to the to the mix there has provides a lot of economic incentives for companies to bring the digital technology into infrastructures and organizations and businesses that historically have not depended on that digital infrastructure, and so the those digital infrastructures that we're now overlaying on those critical infrastructures bring along with it a lot of the same vulnerabilities and are susceptible to the same threats that that we see in other areas of our economy.
So, Harry, we've talked about the consequences, physical consequences from a cyber attack. But it's also the case that you can't have effective cybersecurity in most cases without having effective physical security, because we have to consider not only remote attacks, but also the insider threat and gaining physical access to your IT systems. And in addition, physical security systems are among those systems that are now vulnerable to cyber attack because they too are networked. And so your security surveillance cameras, for example, are now potentially susceptible to remote access and that threatens your physical security. So these are in many ways inexorably intertwined.
Well, this really makes perfect sense to me, and I don't think we've really recognized the fact of the closeness of the physical and the cybersecurity in the past. And I'm glad that both of you are working in this exciting area and working so closely together to bring these together. So, Mark, what technology trends are you seeing now that support this evolving intersection of cyber and the physical threats that we're seeing today?
Well, there are a number of things, a number of ways you could address that. But certainly the growing use of embedded systems. You know, embedded systems are in really all facets of our society. These, while they're not computers, they act much like computers, and they can react like computers. So the growing ubiquitousness of these embedded systems that really are in everything from cars and airplanes to substations and water treatment plants and auto manufacturing, everything has these embedded systems that as I mentioned earlier, have potential vulnerabilities that can be used for disruption. So the embedded systems is certainly one of the technology trends I think where we're seeing an evolving intersection. The growing use of wireless is something that we're seeing more and more of. These systems, that many of them are located in remote locations, and so there's a growing use of wireless technology to manage these things remotely. So there's a variety of different technologies and things that, in fact, do play a part in that intersection of physical and cyber.
Well, you know, on the heels of Hurricane Sandy just recently that we've all experienced here as a nation and are still experiencing, I might add, the results of, and also recent reports of vulnerabilities to the nation's electric grids. Are there certain sectors or threats that keep you up at night from a physical and a cyber perspective?
I wouldn't say there's not one that maybe is more important than others, although, you know, some are certainly more visible than others. The electricity sector, as I mentioned a minute ago, the water sector, communication sectors, those things that people can, they're a bit more tangible and people can see and touch and feel and smell. Those certainly things that I worry a lot about. From a threat perspective, you know, we've recently seen attacks on the financial system in America, and the actually really relatively low level technology attacking, but the response that it required from both the public and the private sector to address that has been pretty remarkable. So those kinds of things, you know, you think that everything is high tech and whiz bang. And in fact, it can be something fairly trivial from a technology perspective that can cause some significant disruption.
So it sounds like these critical infrastructures are the ones that are your biggest concern.
Well, they are. I mean, that's what the job at DHS is about, is the protecting the homeland and these services and systems and technologies that society and our citizens depend on for health and safety and welfare. Those are the things that I focus on and those things that keep me awake at night, as you say.
Great. Well, Suzanne, how about from your perspective?
Well, one of the things we spend a good deal of time on is assessing, gathering data and doing analysis to help prioritize critical infrastructure. What are the most essential? What are the ones where we have to really focus and allocate resources? And in order to do that, you have to understand the consequences if you lose that asset, facility, network, or system, and work your way back from that in terms of figuring out what are the highest priorities, which highlights the need for a holistic approach. You can't look at cybersecurity and prioritize on cybersecurity without assessing the physical consequences that will result from a cyber penetration or cyber attack.
Great. Well, I know that Mark, you and Suzanne have been working very, very hard over there. And, you know, how is DHS helping to set the example for best practices in connecting cyber and physical security? And are there ways that any of you can that you can share publicly with us here during our broadcast?
Oh, Harry, we have made a concerted effort to ensure that we are not working in stovepipes here. We have a cybersecurity organization and an infrastructure protection organization that traditionally focused on physical security, and we have made concerted efforts to ensure that we're taking an integrated approach. And one of the specifics is we have set up an integrated analysis task force. That task force draws on expertise from the cyber side of the house and the physical security side of the house to do the kind of modeling and analysis that I've been talking about, where you assess the consequences in the physical world and the cross-sector consequences, so that you're not looking just at one sector, but the dependencies between sectors. So all the sectors that rely on electricity, all the sectors that rely on transportation and communications.
That's great. You've been doing some great work there, Suzanne. And Mark, can you add to that, please?
Yeah. We have also, I think, another very successful thing that DHS is doing is we have our people scattered around the country in the different FEMA regions working with the private sector, doing assessments on the ground, and incorporating both physical security and cybersecurity components to those assessments, and working with, as I said, both the private sector, but state and local governments, people really literally across the country. And it's probably one of the growing services that we are providing for the nation out of DHS. I've been around the country talking quite a bit lately, and this is the one issue that's coming up a lot, that people are more and more interested in how we can help them on that from that perspective.
Well, you both have given us some great thoughts and ideas on the way that DHS is now taking a look at both the physical and the cyber areas of our critical infrastructure and how to protect that to the best of our abilities.
And we're going to come back and talk more about that as we return with our topic today, physical and cyber infrastructure protection, with our two experts from the Department of Homeland Security. We thank them for being here. Stay tuned. This is Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jane Norris. Here's General Harry Radege, Chairman of the Center for Cyber Innovation at Deloitte.
Given the growing frequency of serious cyber incidents today, no agency can protect against every cyber attack. It's just as important to pair your preventive measures with planned resilience. That means being able to respond to and recover from an attack. One strategy might be rehearsing counteractions so they work as planned if there is an attack.
Learn more about cyber readiness at Deloitte.com/federal. Welcome back to Fed Central, brought to you by Deloitte. Today we're talking about the physical and cyber infrastructure protection programs that are going on at DHS, a whole-of-nation approach. And with us, Suzanne Spaulding, the Deputy Undersecretary for National Protection and Programs Directorate, Mark Weatherford, the Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity for the National Protection and Programs Directorate at DHS, and Lieutenant General Harry Radege, who is the Chairman of the Deloitte Center for Cyber Innovation and a Director with Deloitte Services. Harry?
Thanks, Jane. Well, earlier, Mark had mentioned the Protected Security Advisor position. And for our listening audience here today, how important is it to work with the private industry and other government partners to devise a process that enables a holistic, whole-of-nation, if you will, approach to cyber and physical security?
Harry,
Suzanne?
It's absolutely essential. And our protective security advisors, who are DHS folks who are spread out across the country in all of the FEMA regions, are an absolute essential part of that effort. They are on the ground in local areas, in cities and towns across the country, working directly with their private sector stakeholders. In this case, with owners and operators of critical infrastructure. You know, we talk about critical infrastructure, at least 85% of it is owned by the private sector. And so this presents a challenge for the government, and we have got to work as partners with our private sector stakeholders and with our federal partners who have particular expertise. The Department of Energy is the lead agency for the energy sector, Department of Transportation for the transportation sector. And what DHS does is then to take the efforts that each of these lead agencies do and help coordinate and integrate them and bring a cross-sector approach. But our PSAs are an absolutely vital link between the government and the private sector.
Great. Mark?
Well, and as I mentioned, you, the PSA program, I just can't emphasize how important it is to the state and local governments and the private sector organizations around the country. And because of the success of that and the growing interdependencies between physical and cyber, it's one of the other things that we're growing within DHS is a cyber protective service or advisor program, very much like the PSA program. So it's a companion program because, as I mentioned, when these guys go out to the field and they're working with the owners and operators, you can't separate physical from cyber. There's a need for both of this both levels of expertise on the ground when we're working with these folks. So really is a growing important program for us at DHS.
Well, we've been talking about an awful lot of new activity and a number of issues and new ideas and concepts. So what are some of the challenges that DHS and the private sector are experiencing in collaborating on these issues? And what are some tips for the private sector on engaging the government?
Well, certainly some of the challenges, it's always been and probably always will be a challenge is sharing of information. And, you know, the sharing of vulnerability information always creates a little bit of fear, especially if you're in a regulated environment, that there's going to be implications and ramifications back on your organization. But that sharing of information is really where we're seeing a lot of magic and a lot of value within the public-private partnership. Within our NCIC, the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center, it's a 24/7, 365 operations center, and we have a variety of people that reside there, but from a variety of different federal agencies, some of the information sharing and analysis centers, representation from the electricity sector, the financial services sector, and then we also have law enforcement, FBI, Secret Service, and then DOD representation. And there's an incredible amount of information sharing that happens that would never happen anywhere else when you put all of these people together in a room. So the challenges is of information sharing, and we're breaking down that barrier by getting people in and creating avenues for them to do better information sharing.
Great. Suzanne, could you add to that?
Oh, well, it is, as I said earlier, it is a challenge, this relationship between the private sector and the government in the area of critical infrastructure. It is a new, relatively new area of focus for the government. And you know, the punchline so often is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. What we've struggled to do, and I think we've made great progress, is to convince the private sector that, in fact, the government has some value to add in tackling the challenges of physical and cybersecurity. In terms of tips for the private sector in interacting with the government, one, I would encourage the private sector to be an active participant and partner with the government. We use that partnership word a lot, but I don't think we really understand that it requires that both players be active, and private sector can't view themselves as simply a passive recipient of information, whether it's threat information or other kinds of information sharing, but come to the table and help us understand. Bring your expertise, we'll bring ours, and together we can meet this challenge.
Well, you've both addressed the federal and private sector areas, but let's delve now into something that I'm hearing more and more of. How can the state and local government and officials and police agencies and other key stakeholders help DHS to implement programs to integrate this physical and cybersecurity domain?
You know, the state and local folks play a very important role, and we saw, for example, with Hurricane Sandy, where there was this whole-of-nation approach, both in the preparation and in the incident management and in the response and now the restoration and long-term recovery. The state and local folks have a unique expertise, capability, role, and authorities. I'll give just one example. Prioritizing power restoration. That is a decision that is made appropriately at the local level. And yet DHS was able to pull data together, do modeling and analysis that we were able to provide to the state and local officials to help inform their decisions about where do they need to focus their efforts on power restoration, where were there a real lack of gas stations that had power that were open, where folks were relying on generators and running out of gasoline to fuel those generators. Those kinds of things that are, sometimes difficult for the local people, local officials to gather that data and do that modeling, we were able to provide some value added there.
And to add to that, there's a number of, it goes back to information sharing most fundamentally, but there's a number of programs that have been established and have been very, very successful. The National Association of State CIOs, the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center, and a variety of other things. And being a former state CISO, I understand what the relationship requirements are working between the executive branch at the state level and the executive branch in the federal level. And there are so many interdependencies in the cyber arena, and you can't distinguish between what a perimeter is anymore. There are no more perimeters. We share so much information, on a daily basis between state and local governments and the federal government. And the relationships is just, it's critical that we are touching and talking on a very regular basis. And, trust is so important, but trust is about personal relationships. You can't delegate trust to policies or regulations. It's built on personal relationships.
Well, we're starting to talk now and getting into the personal relationship and the people aspect. I have heard over the last few years the human capital crisis that some feel that we are experiencing. What are your thoughts from a DHS perspective on awareness, education, and training in these critical areas of cybersecurity and physical security?
Well, I've been quoted often as saying that I think this is a national issue and growing into a almost crisis stage, that the growing need for professionals in the physical and cybersecurity arena is acute. As I go around the country and talk to companies, it's the one consistent issue is there's plenty of people, but there's not enough people that have all the talent that we need to do the cybersecurity and physical security requirements across the board. One of the things that we've done to address this, Secretary Napolitano instituted a task force in June that reported out in September for how we could address the growing gap of talent and skills within DHS. So we're moving out rapidly on that with a number of Tiger teams that are addressing the recommendations of the task force.
Great. Suzanne, can you comment about that and maybe also pick up one of your mission areas is resiliency also. If you could just give us your thoughts on those areas.
Sure. On the skills, cyber skills, one of the things that I've really been pushing is for more multidiscipline degrees in both poli-sci and cyber. So I think we've got to groom more policymakers who have some of the technical expertise to be able to feel confident in setting policy in this really important arena. And I'm really glad that you brought up the resilience issue, Harry. It's one that I have been thinking, and a number of us over at DHS have been thinking about a great deal. How do we think about resilience of our critical infrastructure in this changed world? And most recent example, of course, being Hurricane Sandy and extreme weather. But we've got aging infrastructure, and we need investment.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. General Radiga, I didn't give you a chance to thank everyone, but...
My pleasure, Jane. It's always great being with Suzanne, Mark, and always with you. Thank you.
And absolutely fascinating show. Thank you all for joining us today. Greatly appreciate your time. And thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Fed Central on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guests, Suzanne Spaulding, the Deputy Undersecretary for National Protection and Programs Directorate, Mark Weatherford, the Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity for the National Protection and Programs Directorate, and Harry Radege. He is the chairman of the Deloitte Center for Cyber Innovation and a director with Deloitte Services LP. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Jane Norris. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This has been Fed Central on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, with Jane Norris, your host. Make sure to tune in again in 2 weeks for another edition of Fed Central on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and on federalnewsradio.com/fedcentral.